This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one queer story at a time. I'm Matt and we are back live in the Joy studios, scanning the queer news of the world with the World Wide Wave panel. Tonight, good evening, Shannon.
Hey, good to be here.
And hello, Paul.
Good evening. It's been named one of the most dangerous places in the world to be LGBTI. It's a former British colony that has retained that infamous colonial-era sodomy law. But even beyond those laws, many people describe a culture of toxic masculinity and widespread homophobia. Welcome to Jamaica!
But is Jamaica finally being held to account? The Inter-American Commission on Human Rights has ruled that their laws against the abominable crime of buggery and acts of gross indecency effectively led to state-sanctioned violence against LGBTIQ Jamaicans. And pro bono lawyer group, the Human Dignity Trust, was right there with local activists. Taya Braun from the Human Dignity Trust joins us tonight. Here's a taste of what's coming up.
And at the other end of the spectrum, Simone Edwards, not an activist, a regular, you know, woman living her life in Jamaica, subjected to ridiculous violence, shot twice by anti-LGBT gangs who tried to kill both her and her brothers, one of whom is gay, as well, was just horrified that that's what she was subjected to and that's what people continue to be subjected to, and was willing and had the courage to stand up to that and to put her name forward and to speak out, this isn't right, not just for me, but for anybody in Jamaica.
Jamaica's old world sodomy laws remain on the books. The government says that they're rarely used, only in cases of aggravated sexual assault, but they are still there. And they serve as a reminder of how LGBTI people are viewed in society, as criminals. Taya Braun leads a team of lawyers who give their services to try and right the wrongs of British colonial era laws. The Human Dignity Trust has been supporting two Jamaicans to bring their case to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. We asked Taya to give us an overview of this particular case and how the court ruled.
Firstly, just to clarify, it was a case against Jamaica at the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, which is a regional human rights tribunal, sort of quasi-judicial tribunal. And it's a case that challenged Jamaica's maintenance of the colonial era buggery and gross indecency laws, which criminalize, in addition to non-consensual conduct, criminalize consensual same-sex intimacy between men. And those have been on the books since colonial times. They're written in 19th century Victorian morality laws, and they stigmatize, discriminate against, push underground, and invite violence against the entire LGBT community in Jamaica. So this case was about taking Jamaica to task for continuing to keep those laws on the books, and to argue that those laws violate Jamaica's commitments under the Inter-American, the American Convention on Human Rights, which, amongst many other things, has rights to privacy and equality and dignity and things that these laws clearly violate. And so the commission agreed with our arguments that indeed these laws violate Jamaica's obligations under that treaty and should be repealed.
You've called the ruling precedent setting. What makes this such a historic ruling?
A couple of things. Firstly, it is the first case ever on this topic in the Inter-American system. So the Inter-American Commission, as well as another body, the Inter-American Court, hear all sorts of human rights cases and issue rulings on them. This is the first case on this topic of criminalizing LGBT people that that Inter-American system has ever considered. So it is precedent setting in that it now sets the stage for the interpretation of convention rights as they apply to LGBT people and specifically to criminalization of LGBT people. But it's also precedent setting in that it's also the first case of its kind anywhere in the world that looks at it both from the perspective of gay men who are directly criminalized, as well as trans women who would be captured under the law, as well as lesbians and others in the LGBT community that aren't technically captured by the law, but we all know are very much directly impacted by the law. In that what these laws do, they're much less, in most countries, they're much less about prosecuting people for the conduct in question than for stigmatizing and causing all sorts of other mischiefs. And that mischief is something that everybody in the LGBT community experiences. It's the stigma, it's the violence. And this case had both a gay man and a lesbian as claimants, both of whom experienced pretty extreme violence in Jamaica, in some cases at the hands of the law enforcement authorities themselves, and received no protection from the state of Jamaica. And indeed, the state of Jamaica is ultimately condoning that sort of violence because it signals to the entire society that LGBT people are effectively all criminals. And so it invites and fosters that sort of violence. So even those within the community that are not technically captured by the law, they are also having their rights violated. So that's a first of its kind for the world.
The court ruling, not only did it recommend the removal of these colonial era buggery laws, it went a step further and recommended the implementation of anti-discrimination laws, which is a really positive thing. Did that surprise you?
No, it is a broad and sweeping set of recommendations, which is fantastic. But that is all within the mandate of the commission. The commission, unlike a court that might have only specific legal question to answer, the commission is able to look at what does the state need to do to change the situation. And repealing the law is one step, but obviously it goes much further than that. Repealing the law isn't enough. A state to really ensure that LGBT people enjoy all of their basic human rights, the same as anybody else, you need to tackle all forms of discrimination. You need to educate people. You need to train law enforcement. You need to collect data and statistics. And so the commission's recommendation is really looking at all of those things holistically. And it really is all of those things that Jamaica needs to do and many other countries.
That's Taya Braun from the Human Dignity Trust speaking to us from London on Joy 94.9. We go into this a little bit later as well as to why this group of English lawyers is getting involved in a case in Jamaica, but essentially Human Dignity Trust does a whole lot of work with former British colonies because they sort of say, well, we know the British laws that were created, we know how best to change them, to move them on, we know the boundaries that these countries are dealing within, so they're kind of helping out these countries to change their laws. So that's where Human Dignity Trust fits in. The first case of its kind, first time criminalising at this, it's a human rights commission. It's the first time they've actually had an LGBT case presented. That kind of stunned me a bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really shocked me that I guess it had taken this long for it to, a case like this to get to them.
So there's two plaintiffs?
Two plaintiffs. So there's a gay man and a lesbian and I guess they're, through telling their story, they're raising the issues and the lawyers are putting their stories into the framework for the court, for this commission, to be able to deal with it and assess it and make recommendations. As Taya said there, these laws which have been sitting there on the books, and there's been some analysis done in Jamaica where really it's only in very aggravated cases that they're used at the moment, but they're still there. And as Taya says, it's not really about the prosecution. It's more about the deterrence, stigmatising. And I love that word mischief, because that's just, that's exactly seems to be the way that it's used. If I want to mess with you, then I've got the laws to be able to do it.
It's basically it's creating a second tier, a second class citizenship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was also interesting when she talked about how a lesbian was one of the plaintiffs, I believe she said, right? Mm. Even if they're not technically captured in that law, which, I mean, is really common, right? Like, a lot of laws here, when it was illegal here, especially like in Tasmania, for example, didn't really include women because it was just kind of not really seeing that another...
In Victorian England, they didn't view... They couldn't see that two women could have sex.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they didn't think that we, you know, experienced any sort of pleasure, so I guess it made absolutely no sense that two women were together. So I guess it's just interesting that they were able to use women still to kind of refute the laws.
Yeah. And you get this thing there where you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If the police are able to attack you, are able to use this law against you and arrest you, but because the law's there, other people feel they can do the same, and the police aren't even going to bother about it. So you're kind of, as an LGBT person, you really, where do you turn?
I suppose because you're seen as doing, you're already a criminal because of this law.
Yeah.
Because of who you love and because who you want to sleep with.
Yep. One of the good news stories out of this is the anti-discrimination laws that have been recommended as well. And the thing I really like about that is that it actually impacts and benefits all minorities. So it's not just the LGBT community, it will be women, it will be, you know, other people in society that if they adopt these laws, and there's still an if there, it will benefit all sorts of groups in society.
Do we know what standing this commission has? Do the government have to act on the recommendations?
So we asked that question, but it's coming up, so I'm not going to tell you right now, Paul. In fact, coming up, Shannon, you were talking about who these people are. Well, we find out who these brave Jamaicans are that shared their life experiences with the commission in order to drive change in Jamaica. You're on World Wide Wave,
where our diverse communities can come together. Joy.
Dzień dobry. I am Kylie from Poland. It's great to have a place like Joy 94.9. where we can talk about trans issues from across the globe on a worldwide wave.
Change does not come quickly in Jamaica, but it doesn't stop the resolve of the LGBTI Jamaicans in their quest for basic rights. And they now have a strong ally in the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. A gay man and a lesbian raised their hand to tell their story of violent homophobia and discrimination as plaintiffs in the case to the commission. Both plaintiffs were forced to flee Jamaica as refugees due to the violent attacks against them. Supporting them in their case were the lawyers from the Human Dignity Trust, led by Taya Braun. We asked Taya what drove them to doggedly persist in this case.
Yeah, they're both really, really heroic. Gareth Henry is an activist. In addition to being a gay man, he is a human rights activist and a longstanding one, both in Jamaica and now in Canada, where he has the protection of the Canadian state under refugee law. And so he has, you know, the drive, determination, and vision of an activist, and he is determined to continue helping those who remain in Jamaica. And indeed, he works for an organization called the Rainbow Railroad, which continues to help get persecuted LGBT people out of countries where they're not safe and get them to lands of safety. So I think for him, this was very much about continuing to seek change, not just for himself, but for everybody in Jamaica. And at the other end of the spectrum, Simone Edwards, not an activist, a regular, you know, woman living her life in Jamaica, subjected to ridiculous violence, shot twice by anti-LGBT gangs who tried to kill both her and her brothers, one of whom is gay, had no protection from the state, was subject to all sorts of other violence, and is now indeed safe on asylum protection in Europe. But, you know, as well, was just horrified that that's what she was subjected to, and that's what people continue to be subjected to, and was willing and had the courage to stand up to that and to put her name forward and to say, to speak out, really, to say this isn't right, not just for me, but for anybody in Jamaica.
And they were backed also by JFLAG, which is the leading Jamaican advocacy group, and have been real campaigners for so long. You know, they are the definition of resilience. How was the news received by JFLAG and the LGBT community in Jamaica?
Really positively. I mean, everybody is thrilled with the decision and to finally have it. It's been a 10-year journey for all of us, and JFLAG, of course, central to all of it and to everything that's being done in Jamaica. So, you know, they see it very much as a vindication. I think everybody sees it as a real vindication of what everybody's been through in Jamaica for decades and centuries, indeed, that this decision confirms and affirms what all of us know, which is that the state of Jamaica is responsible for the suffering that people are continuing to experience in Jamaica. And unless and until they change those laws and implement those recommendations, they'll continue to be complicit in the murders, in the violence, in the, you know, everything that's happening to LGBT people in Jamaica. But I think they also see it as an advocacy tool that will continue to help them work with the Jamaican government, which has been showing some incremental improvements, I suppose, in their understanding and their attempts to look at issues of LGBT people. They've gone nowhere near far enough, but JFLAG is working with the government to try and open these dialogues, and this gives them another tool to help them with their ongoing work.
And did I read correctly that you've been working on pursuing this case for 10 years?
Indeed, almost 10 years. It was filed in late 2011, and it took until the decision itself was made in September of 2019. So the decision itself took about 8 years, and that unfortunately is just par for the course at the Inter-American Commission. They have a huge backlog of human rights cases. But there was then a process after that before we were able to make the decision public, procedural steps that are normal part of the functioning of the commission. It gave Jamaica time to respond, the parties time to make submissions on whether Jamaica had implemented the recommendations, that sort of thing. So all of that took us to a cumulative total of about 9 years from start to finish before the decision was public.
So let's explore where this has gone or is going. I mean, it is a recommendation from the court. What has the government said about that? You know, is this a binding decision on them?
It's not a binding decision. No, there are no decisions of the Inter-American Commission are binding. The commission has no enforcement powers, so it cannot force Jamaica to do anything. They are recommendations. One would hope that governments would at least take seriously those recommendations and look at them. But regardless, it will continue to inform all dialogue in Jamaica. That Jamaica is a member of the Organization of American States, and decisions against states will continue to be brought up. To what extent have you implemented these recommendations? So, you know, we don't yet know what Jamaica will do and when. That's very much an open question now, and ongoing work that JFLAG and others, with our support and others, will seek to help accelerate change, at least.
The great team at the Human Dignity Trust in London, that's Taya Braun on Joy 94.9, talking about the challenges, but a hint of optimism, I'd say, there in terms of, you know, this is a legal win that might put some pressure on Jamaica. It comes back to your question from before, yeah, Paul, was answered. How are you feeling about that?
It's a legal win, but it has no teeth.
Well, non-binding, but look, the two things that I took from that, one was it becomes an advocacy tool, so it's giving the local activists more evidence, more power to be able to negotiate and push for what they need locally. It's always going to come better from a local than it will from somebody overseas. But the second thing that Taya mentioned, that the lower courts, it's used in the lower courts. So when these things come up at a more local level, they can lean on this as a legal precedent. So, you know, if somebody is up before a judge for some sort of sodomy charge, they can point to this Inter-American Court and saying, look, it's wrong.
Yeah, so a higher court has made a decision, and so the lower court can use that as a precedent.
Yeah, so it might be a bit of an out for some
also,
of
Also, I guess, I mean, look, I'm not a lawyer. I'll stay that now. Yep. I don't know anything.
None of us are lawyers. Yeah, here. We're just making this up as we go.
I don't know anything beyond Legally Blonde when it comes to legal advice or anything about that. But also, I mean, you do hope that it would give them some idea as to better legal arguments, better ways of going about it, perhaps. Like, I mean, I'm sure they've learned a lot from the legal arguments in, you know, making these arguments previously to the intra court, about, you know, the best way to go do it.
It can also be, when these big commissions come out with findings, it can embarrass the country that the findings have been against.
Yes. Definitely.
So maybe that will push Jamaica into, or persuade Jamaica to make some changes.
Might give cover to judges to say, you know, they can rely on it instead of kind of coming out themselves and saying, hey, I think this is what should be happening.
I'm not making a ruling.
Someone else has made this ruling.
There are countries where when these sorts of rulings come out, they use it as a badge of honour, though. So it's a fine line. I get the sense, though, that there is, Taya said it, there is some incremental change. There are some small things happening. So let's hope, you know, this is the snowball that's been pushed a bit. It did also take me back a couple of weeks back. We spoke on the report on state-sanctioned killings and the language Taya was using there as well around the government is responsible because they've got these laws on the books and they're not doing anything about them. When there are these incidents of violence or discrimination or persecution, they are responsible.
Because they're not doing anything about it. So yes. It's by stepping back and being silent that they're actually being
part of the problem.
Part of the problem.
Yeah. If you missed that, you can catch it on our podcast, joy.org.au/worldwidewave, on state-sanctioned killings from a few weeks back. And also want to just give a quick shout-out to JFLAG, which is the Jamaican advocacy group. We spoke to them a little while back now, but they continue to do great, great work there. Coming up, we'll ask if this ruling could maybe have a bit of a domino effect in the entire Caribbean region. This is Worldwide Wave.
Our community is strong. Make Joy even stronger and become a member. joy.org.au.
Hello, I'm Stuart Martin. I'm a board member for the Defence LGBTI Information Service, marching with pride on Worldwide Wave.
It's Worldwide Wave on Joy. Did want to make a mention because podcasting, do you all have lots of podcasts that you follow aside from ours?
A never-ending, like complete list, yes.
Yes, of course, yes. Just don't ask any more questions beyond that.
Right. Joy actually has a podcasting and radio content course where we can give you all the things you need to create your own podcast or pre-recorded radio show from your home. And you know we can do it because we've been doing it for the past 12 months. Basically, you will be trained by an expert team of Joy trainers and learn the basics of podcasting and writing, a bit about the media law, interview techniques, presenting, recording, editing, the whole kit and caboodle. And the good thing about it is you can do it all from your home. So you'll be coached along the way, and then the final product goes up on our website and you can send it all around the world to your friends. It's a great opportunity. Go to our website, joy.org.au, and you can see all about it.
And that's where they'll find our podcast as well, on joy.org.au/worldwidewave or iTunes or whatever your favourite podcast platform happens to be.
And don't forget to leave us a review.
Positive, please.
We love the reviews. We are, of course, in Jamaica tonight, and it's where the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights has made a historic ruling recommending against Jamaica maintaining their colonial-era sodomy laws. They also went a step further, recommending the introduction of anti-discrimination laws. Jamaica is a big influencer in the Caribbean region. If change can be made to the laws there, could it have a regional effect too? We asked our guest tonight, Taya Braun from the Human Dignity Trust.
Well, one of the other important impacts of this decision is that it is a decisive, authoritative interpretation now of the convention as it relates to the criminalization of LGBT people. And there are still several countries in the region that maintain these criminal laws. Although that decision isn't enforceable on its own, it can be used and it will be used in any domestic cases that are being brought in the domestic courts around the region. And there are several of those, and it will be quite persuasive in the domestic courts. So it will help trickle down through to bodies, courts that do have enforcement power. And as I mentioned, there are several cases in the domestic courts across the region. So I think it will have a big impact legally in encouraging courts to strike these laws down when they're hearing these cases. And it will also have the political signaling effect. It is telling all states in the region, if you are maintaining these laws, you're violating your international treaty obligations that you signed up to.
Now, there's still, what, about 70 countries that criminalise homosexuality. It's getting ever smaller. Angola very recently decriminalised. Are we now getting to the point, you think, that the political processes, we're getting to the hard countries, if you like, so the political avenues to achieve decriminalisation are just getting too hard and it has to now be fought out in the courts?
It's a bit of both. The numbers are absolutely going down. If you look at the numbers over, you know, certainly the last 100 years and then even the last 20 years, even the last 10 years, they're constantly going down and they will continue in that direction. And it is a mix and will continue to be a mix of legislative reform and litigation. So there are a number of countries in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years that have voluntarily overhauled their laws, whether just these laws that criminalize LGBT people or a whole basket of sexual offense laws that are vastly out of date. And that's another thing that we work on, you know, rewriting the entire sexual offenses legislative regime in a country, because they're all based on Victorian English legal frameworks. And so rape laws are out of date. Ages of consent for sexual conduct are out of date and discriminatory. People with disability are treated in derogatory terms in sexual offense legislation. So there are a number of countries that are scrapping all of that and rewriting human rights compliant sexual offense legislation. So we've seen a number of those. We're continuing to work with a couple of countries to rewrite their laws. And in cases where governments are not willing, but the courts are effective and are available to people, then the courts will continue to be used. And through the combination of those two legal tools, we will continue to see the numbers go down.
And through the efforts of the Human Dignity Trust, which we love the work that you do. Taya Braun from the Human Dignity Trust speaking from London. Thanks for joining us again on Worldwide Wave.
My pleasure, Matt. Thanks very much.
A good friend of the show. We've spoken to them a few times because they just do such great work. Taya, they're saying that, you know, things are going down fast. Sometimes you can sort of sit here and think, oh, it takes so long. You know, this case alone was a bit over nine years. But
so,
if you
so
think,
is the number of where it's illegal gone down? Is it,
yes.
Is it under 70 now?
I think it's right on 70 last time. Sometimes you get, Angola was one of the tricky ones because they'd passed it, but then it wasn't enacted for like 12 months and you get all these sorts of grey areas. But
yeah, because I remember it used to be around 72.
Yeah, so. I remember it was a 77. Mm. It's just edging down. But as she rightly points out, think back 100 years ago and then 20 years ago, that's a big change. But even the last 20 years, there's been this acceleration. So you can feel there's a little bit of a momentum, a little bit of a, you know, a tipping point. There's always going to be some countries that just, you're probably not going to get there. But I think there's a lot of countries for which that the embarrassment side of things that you just mentioned, Paul, might force them to go, okay, it's time for us to tidy up our books.
And as I've said before, the colonial laws, I mean, the UK government's come out and said, stop using them, get rid of them.
Mm.
They've apologised for them, I believe. So the countries that have still got them on their statute books should be just repealing them.
Yep.
You just repeal them.
I mean, Singapore's a classic example. Here's this, very first world country. You can go to a gay nightclub, but it is still illegal for same-sex sexual acts there, even though it's not enforced. We did also touch there a bit. So the kind of things this ruling can also help with is not just the local courts in Jamaica, but also across the region. So that, again, that precedent thing that because all of these countries in Southern and Central America are partner to this legal system, that idea of precedent can help other countries, which is a really, really positive thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it is an area where these changes are really starting to happen there. Obviously not everywhere, but there are a lot of countries there that are really starting to make some headway into these types of these laws and stuff and changes towards LGBT people.
And the fact that the Human Dignity Trust, they don't just fight these cases in the court and support the local activists to do that. They help the countries to rewrite their laws when they, you know, get to that point to say, okay, we're ready to make a move, or they're there to actually help them crafting it. Because, as I said earlier on in the show, they actually know the laws pretty well. They're from England. Yes, we're blaming you, Paul.
I've not apologised yet this show.
You haven't. You were trying to hold back, but, yes. You know. The Brits did do some good things as well, so, you know.
I'm not sure where, but I'll take your word on for that. I'll take any compliment I can where I can.
So we'll keep an eye on how things progress in Jamaica and hope for some really positive outcomes in the years to come.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is William calling from Wee Wee Blogs, and you are listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9. Let's do this!
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
And a huge thank you to Taya Braun from the Human Dignity Trust. They can be found on www.humandignitytrust.org.
I also a big thank you to everyone that interacted with us on Facebook. Selena, James, Brett, Jaden, Liz and Heat Moore. We're very easy to find on Facebook. It's W3Joy.
And we do post international LGBTI news throughout the week because we've got an excellent behind the scenes team, Dean, our social media master, and Peter, our podcaster. Catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.